Thank you, Dr. Maurer, and good afternoon, fellow Federationists.
Good afternoon.
Strategic Initiatives is the department that deals with our legislative and policy initiatives, our public relations operation, and NFB Newsline. All of these efforts are interrelated. For example, our public relations strategy helps to advance our legislative and policy initiatives. The considerable media attention that we have garnered over the silent vehicle issue has helped to advance the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act. A front page article that appeared in the Washington Post on September 23, 2009, highlighted our work in this area. USA Today, the largest circulation newspaper in the United States, covered our agreement to work with General Motors on sound technology for their vehicles. The Associated Press also covered our support of the Google Books settlement, which may bring 10 million books to us in an accessible format. Yet another Associated Press article described the Internet Archive's efforts to make accessible textbooks, accessible books, and featured quotes from President Maurer. All of these articles were available on NFB Newsline. That's what people mean when they talk about synergy. Think about all the times over the past year that you could have listened to Associated Press articles on NFB Newsline featuring the National Federation of the Blind using our own Associated Press newsfeed. I am frequently asked how the National Federation of the Blind is able to get so much publicity. There are two reasons. First is because the National Federation of the Blind is the organization creating programs, fighting discrimination, and changing attitudes regarding the blind. Second is because we have 50,000 people on our public relations team. And fellow Federationists, we are doing an excellent job. One of our big efforts over the next year, will be promoting the Blind Driver Challenge. Just prior to this convention, we participated in a press conference at the Daytona International Speedway, where we introduced and talked about the second generation prototype Blind Driver Challenge vehicle and the fact that it will debut on January 29, 2011. The first generation vehicle was debuted at our Youth Slam in 2009 and garnered substantial media attention, including a front page article in the Washington Post. The Daytona event will be even bigger. We will soon launch www.blinddriverchallenge.org, where you'll be able to keep up on all of the exciting information regarding this new project. I want to show a short 3-minute video that we showed at the press conference in Daytona, so let's roll the video.
Obviously, America is a car-crazed culture. We love our cars. It's one of those things that we just completely take for granted. We just hop in the car whenever we want. We go wherever we want.
Driving an automobile has always been thought to be a visual activity.
I used to really love driving. It was one of the things I did not only to get around and to do the things that I needed to do, but it was something I did for recreation. I knew that my sight was limited and it was getting worse all the time. You know, I finally came to the realization that, you know, you just got to stop driving.
We believe in the National Federation of the Blind that we can do it if we just build the interface to make it possible. Today, we are working on the blind drivable car. We call it the National Federation of the Blind Blind Driver Challenge.
Now with this project, I'm starting to think of the possibilities of, wow, maybe I will drive again sometime.
So we're all looking at this as a project that does have some risk. But the only way you push forward and truly move something to the next level is by being willing to take those risks. You think about the history of flight in this country. I mean, we didn't get an airplane into the air until 1904. and in 60 years we were landing on the moon. So I look at this project and I say, what will this be in 50 years?
To accomplish our goal, the National Federation of the Blind will work in partnership with universities and technology manufacturers to combine our pioneering enterprise with their technical expertise to make the dream of a car drivable by the blind a reality.
My name is Dennis Hong. I'm a professor in mechanical engineering and also the director of ROMELA, the Robotics and Mechanisms Laboratory at Virginia Tech. One of the key technologies that we develop is called AirPix. You can think of AirPix as a computer monitor for the blind. It's like a tablet device. Think of an air hockey table. There's a lot of holes on it. Compressed air comes out, so the user can move his or her hand over it and actually see the environment around the vehicle. Another non-visual user interface technology is called DriveGrip. It's a glove that has vibrating motors on the back of the hand. So depending on how the motors vibrate, it gives information about direction. So we use that for conveying directional information to the user. This is one of the two actual vehicles that will be converting to the next generation blind driver challenge vehicle.
The blind drivable car is one of the most exciting opportunities to build new technologies to bring information to the blind that we have ever undertaken.
It gives you freedom and it really brings into reality that this could happen someday.
So what do you think?
I think it's great. I haven't driven in 6 years and I want to drive again. What do you think about that?
How do you like that? What do you think about that? You'll hear from some of my colleagues in a few moments about some of our legislative activities. Right now, I'd like to update you on our efforts regarding access to electronic books. As you know, the National Federation of the Blind took immediate action when Amazon released the Kindle 2. That device included the ability to read books using text-to-speech, but the Authors Guild raised objections, and Amazon agreed to turn the feature off for books that publishers designate. As you probably remember, we protested in front of the Authors Guild headquarters in New York City and visited the Los Angeles Festival of Books to talk directly with authors and publishers about their decision to turn off text-to-speech for Kindle books. The Associated Press covered our fight to keep the inaccessible Kindle out of university classrooms. And it was not long until universities that were conducting Kindle pilot projects reached agreements with the Justice Department and agreed to discontinue use of this device until it is accessible by the blind. Our efforts also got the attention of the Obama administration. The president's special advisor for disability policy, Karim Dale, who will be here tomorrow, summoned the Reading Rights Coalition, which the NFB founded, Amazon, and the six publishers that were making content available for the Kindle to a meeting at the White House. This meeting resulted in a joint statement being issued by the Reading Rights Coalition, the Authors Guild, and the Association of American Publishers. In essence, the joint statement says that the parties will work together to make sure that electronic books are accessible to people with print disabilities, except perhaps when they are already available as audio books. This means that the agreement paves the way for 95% of published material to be available as accessible electronic books. One of the groups represented at the talks, Hachette Book Group, clearly got the message, and they have announced that all of their Kindle books will be accessible with text-to-speech unless they are already available as audio books. But with all of this progress, the Amazon Kindle is still not accessible. Does Amazon think that we're not concerned? Does Amazon think that we will give up or that we don't care. Maybe they think that access to information for blind people is just not important. Well, fellow Federationists, are we giving up?
No!
Are we going away?
No!
We demand access to electronic books at the same time and on the same terms and at the same price as our sighted peers. We want accessibility now. I can't talk about reading material, of course, without talking about NFB Newsline, which I use regularly and has a special place in my heart. That's because NFB Newsline is what alerted me to the National Federation of the Blind. NFB Newsline was started in 1995. And with the addition of Arkansas in October, it is currently available in 43 states, plus the District of Columbia. We have over 85,000 registered users. Last year, we delivered over 35 million minutes of news and sent out over 2 million email messages. In March of 2009, we made available Web News on Demand, which provides the ability to read publications online. And NFB Newsline in your pocket, which allows you to download publications to a digital talking book player. Since then, we have upgraded these access methods, making NFB Newsline in your pocket compatible with more digital talking book players. And we have just recently added the third of our access methods, Podable News. Podable News allows subscribers to request podcasts of their favorite publications and individual sections so that you can easily tailor a unique publication to your individual interests. Other service enhancements include an on-demand email feature, an online favorites management tool, and the addition of more human-sounding voices. 19 more newspapers and 12 more magazines have been added to NFB Newsline. Looking forward, we'll add even more features and bringing more benefit to subscribers. These new features, available by the end of the year, include job listings, which will allow you to search for jobs in particular categories, and also the ability to download Newsline publications to the NLS digital talking book player. You can learn more about all of these Newsline features and how to use them and so forth if you want to attend the Newsline seminar in the Lalique Room tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. From state legislatures to the federal government to the United Nations, the National Federation of the Blind has become the world's expert on what to do about the danger posed by silent hybrid vehicles. Here to talk about that topic and others is Jesse Hartle.
Good afternoon. Before I start my comments, I wanted to take just a moment to recognize several members of the staff who work with John Perret and Lauren McLarney and myself every day to help us out getting materials ready when we go over to Capitol Hill. I just want to take a moment to recognize Christian Kuhnke, Allison Hammerbacker, Wanda Briggs, Lorraine Rovig. These are all of our support staff and strategic initiatives. If you'll just please give them a hand. Also, Chris Danielson and Jessica Free, who help us with legislation by putting out press releases on our issues. If you all would also recognize them, I appreciate that. In 2003, the National Federation of the Blind and Convention Assembled recognized the dangers posed by hybrid and electric vehicles to blind and other pedestrians by passing a resolution that called upon the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration within the Department of Transportation to initiate research to be performed with significant participation by the National Federation of the Blind to investigate the effect of quiet cars on blind pedestrians, with the aim of proposing safety-based solutions to this problem. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration took no action. The National Federation of the Blind invited members of the auto community to meet with us at the National Center to discuss this important matter. At that time, the auto industry said, "There is no way, automobiles are too quiet, and we are not going to meet with you to talk about this because this is not an issue." The National Federation of the Blind then took our fight to Capitol Hill. At the 2008 Washington seminar, members of our Nevada affiliate met with Senator Harry Reid, and they told the senator what techniques blind people use to travel safely and independently around the streets. Based on that meeting, Senator Reid wrote a letter to the Secretary of Transportation urging the department to look into this critical safety issue. Also at that Washington seminar, our New York affiliate met with Congressman Adolphus Towns. That meeting, the congressman agreed to lead the effort to get this legislation passed and to solve this problem. The Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act was introduced in April of 2008 by Congressman Towns and Cliff Stearns of Florida. Car companies, again, refused to meet to discuss this legislation because they felt there is no way this little nonprofit group of blind people is going to get legislation passed through the United States Congress dealing with the auto industry. In June 2008, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, based on the letter sent by Senator Reid, held a listening session related to quiet cars. After holding this hearing and viewing that they had probably done enough to appease Congress, the department did not put out another statement on this issue for over a year. Many people, the department, auto manufacturers, thought this issue would just go away when the legislation died at the end of that session of Congress. I am here today, and I am going to urge those who do not believe in our ability to take note that on issues that impact the lives of blind people, the National Federation of the Blind does not just go away. We worked with Congressman Towns and Stearns to ensure that the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act was reintroduced early in the first session of the 109th Congress. In April of 2009, we took another step forward when Senators John Kerry of Massachusetts and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania introduced companion legislation in the Senate. Still, we were doubted. I remember reading a blog entry by people who did not support the bill that said something to the effect, "I'm sure the senators had a good laugh, wink, wink. We just introduced this bill that we know is not going to pass." When the House bill picked up 100 co-sponsors, we were still doubted. When the bill gained 150 co-sponsors, we were doubted. Then we got to an interesting number. 218 is a peculiar number. It's a majority of the House of Representatives. When we reached 218 co-sponsors, we started receiving phone calls from auto manufacturers asking to discuss legislation. After gaining 237 co-sponsors in the House and 29 in the Senate, today I am pleased to tell you that the National Federation of the Blind is no longer doubted by anyone on this issue. On May 26th, the House Energy and Commerce Committee unanimously agreed to add provisions of the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act to its version of the Motor Vehicle Safety Act of 2010, H.R. 5381. On On June 9th, the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee took similar action to protect the rights of safe and independent travel for the blind by adding language from the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act to S3302, the Senate Companion Motor Vehicle Safety Act. We appreciate the work of Congressman Towns and Stearns and Senator Kerry to ensure that this amendment language was added to the respective bills. The language will require that hybrid and electric vehicles sold in the United States must be equipped with an alert sound. This alert sound must be recognizable, not as an ice cream truck, not as a cell phone, not as a horse clopping down the street, but as a vehicle. The alert sound cannot require either driver or pedestrian activation of the alert sound. It prohibits anyone other than a dealer or manufacturer from altering the modifying the alert sound. And the dealer or manufacturer can only modify the alert sound in order to remedy a defect to bring that vehicle back into compliance with the motor vehicle safety standard. The Motor Vehicle Safety Act is now awaiting a floor vote in both the House and the Senate. It is my belief that both of these bills will be passed before the August recess, and that the conference committee will work during the August recess to propose final bill legislation in September. We have reached this point because of the work of members of the National Federation of the Blind of Maryland, who earlier this year followed Congressman John Sarbanes from town hall to town hall. He wanted to talk about health care. They wanted to talk about the issues of blindness. Work done in Illinois, where members made multiple appointments with their members of Congress until the member agreed to co-sponsor. The work in Pennsylvania, Emily Angelsik went to Washington seminar and was not able to meet with her member of Congress. She did not stop once she got home. She worked and had a meeting with her member of Congress, Representative Tim Murphy, and he is now a co-sponsor on this legislation. It is the work done by everyone who made a phone call, everyone who made an email. We are at this point because of the work of the National Federation of the Blind. While this will be an outstanding victory for blind people, we cannot celebrate yet. We cannot celebrate until the legislation is signed by the president and into law. This will happen because of this work, and we will not allow it to be taken away from us. When I grew up in Louisiana, at that time, we didn't know about quiet cars just yet. But what we did have was an understanding that if you were not totally blind in a public school, you did not need Braille. That is my life story. I grew up believing that I didn't need Braille because I had a CCTV or a large print book, and it didn't matter whether I read 20 words a minute or 15, or it doesn't matter. It was not until sixth grade, when I entered the Louisiana Center for the Blind's Buddy program, that I met blind people who said, "You need Braille." And I'd love to say that I was a compliant person, but that would not be accurate. It took me until sixth grade before I realized that I might need another tool. Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act states that individuals with disabilities are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. According to a pamphlet released by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, entitled Free Appropriate Public Education for Students with Disabilities, Requirements under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. An appropriate education will include, quote, education services designed to meet the individual education needs of students with disabilities as adequately as the needs of non-disabled students are met. Is it adequate for sighted students to only receive 45 minutes of instruction in reading and writing each week? Would it be adequate for the teachers of sighted students to tell the parents that print is too difficult for their students to learn? Would it be adequate for sighted students to receive textbooks in formats that are useless to the student or to provide materials halfway through the school year? Is it adequate for blind students to be required to answer questions on standardized tests that require sight alone to answer the particular question? Is it adequate for schools to repeatedly, time after time, buy technology which cannot be used by blind students? The answer to all of these questions is absolutely no. The reality is that all of these inadequacies are standard operating procedure in our schools today. The educational system is failing blind students. It is not appropriate, and it is certainly not free. It is costing our blind students their opportunity to compete on terms of equality today and in the future. A poor education leads to poor occupational opportunities, and that is something that the National Federation of the Blind cannot tolerate. In 2001, Congress passed legislation on elementary and secondary education programs known as No Child Left Behind. This law will soon be up for reauthorization, and it is time for members of Congress to realize that No Child Left Behind includes blind children. We must be ready to stand up to those who think the status quo is good enough for blind students. That is, lawyers, vendors, students, teachers, parents, every division in this room needs to stand up together. The people who have the ability to reform the educational system for blind students are here today. Look around. Together, we will march on Capitol Hill. Together, we will win on Capitol Hill. Together, we will change what it means to be blind in America's school systems. I look forward to working with you to ensure that this legislation passes and the reform of education for blind students takes place. Thank you very much. It is now also my pleasure to be able to introduce you to the newest member of the governmental affairs team. Lauren McLarney will be speaking to you concerning the Blind Persons Return to Work Act and the Technology Bill of Rights. Please give Lauren your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Since 1996, blind people collecting Social Security disability insurance are discouraged from going back to work. Despite wanting to work, this disincentive is the result of the monthly earnings limit, where beneficiaries lose all benefits if they earn a single dollar over the 1640 limit. As you know, the National Federation of the Blind has been working for over a decade to reverse the effects of this earnings limit cliff. And if we can get this attached to the Senate jobs bill, we'll finally be able to get this legislation passed. On January 28, 2010, Senators Dodd and McCain introduced the Blind Persons Return to Work Act of 2010. The bill was identical to its House companion legislation, H.R. 886, introduced last year by John Lewis of Georgia, which proposes a 3-for-1 reduction system for blind beneficiaries. The bill would modify the SSDI earning structure so that blind beneficiaries lose $1 worth of benefits for every $3 over the limit that they earn. The bill also has two other logistical components that are new. The first changes the earnings test from a monthly evaluation to an annual evaluation, and the second component is a fixed deduction for impairment-related work expenses to remove administrative burdens that come from itemizing each expense. This Congress is the first time the NFB has attempted to reform SSDI using the 3-for-1 reduction system. It has gotten a positive response from members of Congress, with 68 co-sponsors in the House and 8 in the Senate. All agree that blind people should be encouraged to reach their full employment potential and that all barriers to employment and advancement should be removed. In April, we met with the Subcommittee on Social Security of the House Committee on Ways and Means. Their staffer told us she was unlikely to support this bill because Social Security was already in the process of working on a 2-for-1 demonstration project to test the viability of a phase-out. After that meeting, we found out that the demonstration project was ordered by Congress in 1999. And now, more than 10 years down the road, it still hasn't started. With a 70% rate of blind people unemployed or underemployed, are we going to wait another 10 years? Around the same time, Senator Lincoln of Arkansas, who chairs the Subcommittee on Social Security, Pensions, and Family Policy of the Senate Finance Committee, came on the bill as a co-sponsor. After getting information about a Senate jobs package that may fall into her hands, we decided to pursue that as a vehicle for moving this bill. Senator Dodd's staff started the process and submitted a request to the Congressional Budget Office to get a cost estimate for the 3-for-1 phase-out. Once we know the score, we can move forward in pursuing the Senate jobs package as a vehicle to move this bill. Because Social Security reform is likely several years away, the 2010 jobs package is our best and most exciting opportunity to pass this bill. Decades after the NFB started this fight, we're still pushing for a change in SSDI. So let's get this in the jobs package, pass that bill, and finally allow blind beneficiaries to reach their full employment potential. In November, members of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois met with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, one of 9 deputy majority whips and the vice chair of the Subcommittee on Commerce, Trade, and Consumer Protection of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. We wanted to discuss the Technology Bill of Rights for the Blind. We told her how blind people were being left behind in the marketplace. Technology is advancing rapidly, and touchscreens are replacing tactile methods of use like knobs and buttons. We explained that as flat interactive screens become increasingly popular, products are becoming increasingly inaccessible to the blind. We told her how a blind person can no longer go into the store and have their pick of the newest cell phones, washers and dryers, and electronics. Very few, if any, models exist that are fully accessible to a blind person. Innovations in technology are supposed to make products more efficient and easier to use, but this problem is not about convenience. Consumer products have become fundamental to our lifestyle, yet technology is creating a digital divide where blind people only have second-class access to products and services. For example, consider the kiosk, which is replacing most customer service agents in the service industry. Most airlines ask that customers check in at the kiosk, but blind people are stuck waiting in line because the kiosk isn't accessible. Or a blind person can use the machine, but with the assistance of a sighted person. You can buy a first-class ticket, but when it comes to the kiosk, it's second-class access. This paradox can be seen in other areas of our lives. A blind person might build his or her dream home, but need a sighted person to help him or her use the new kitchen appliances for the first time. Congresswoman Schakowsky agreed that in this technologically advanced world, second-class access is wrong. She decided to stand up for the rights of blind Americans, and on January 27, 2010, she introduced the Technology Bill of Rights for the Blind. The Technology Bill of Rights establishes the Office of Non-Visual Access Compliance, which would be housed within the Department of Commerce. The office would conduct a study on how consumer products can be made accessible, and then establish minimum non-visual access standards to ensure that blind people have access to these products. The bill is extremely comprehensive, covering almost all devices and goods, including consumer electronics, home appliances, kiosks, and office equipment and technology. We hope this bill will bring companies to the table and get them to start making their products accessible. When talking about this bill on Capitol Hill, staffers and members of Congress seem surprised that so few manufacturers aren't making their products accessible to blind people. They say, well, have you considered asking companies to make their products accessible? So, we tell them how we've asked companies to tweak their designs. We tell companies that their products aren't accessible, but surprisingly, they aren't listening. We asked Amazon to make the Kindle accessible 3 times, and they didn't listen. So asking isn't working. And truthfully, we shouldn't have to ask. At a hearing for a telecommunications accessibility bill, Senator Klobuchar of Minnesota said, she addressed a blind witness, and she said, just as technologies and software are upgraded, our laws have to be upgraded as well. The European Union and Japan have already established non-visual accessibility standards, and so it's time that products sold in America be accessible to blind people. Apple is leading the way in accessibility as one of the only manufacturers to produce touchscreen iPhones, iPods, and iPads that are entirely accessibility to blind people right out of the box. We explained to members of Congress that text-to-speech is just one of many popular and inexpensive ways that manufacturers can make their products accessible, and if they do this at the design phase, manufacturers can make their products that meet the needs of blind consumers. And wouldn't they want to? If companies make all products fully accessible, won't they sell more? If Apple can do it, so can the other companies. The Technology Bill of Rights for the Blind got its first big wave of support after Washington Seminar, thanks to our passionate advocacy. We're up to 39 co-sponsors, and Congresswoman Schakowsky is working to get us a hearing date. In addition, members of the New Mexico affiliate have been instrumental in cultivating a relationship with Senator Udall, who has shown interest in being our sponsor of the Senate companion to this bill. We also owe thanks to the Idaho and Maine affiliate, whose advocacy during Washington Seminar helped grab the attention of Senators Crapo and Snow, who have also shown interest in being Republican leads on the Senate bill. We're still in the process of working on the Senate version and talking with industry, but with the introduction of this House bill, we have taken very bold first steps. It's up to us to lead the way to ensure that technology is accessible for the blind. We've won many battles over the years to show that blindness did not mean lack of ability, so the lack of eyesight alone should not mandate second-class access. We've proven that given the right access technology, we can use ATMs and voting machines. We have proven that we know we can compete in the workplace. We know we can run our homes just as well as the sighted, and we know that we will not allow technological advances to result in second-class status. Thank you.